The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is... Please note, the new number is...
Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. Weekly tips on marketing and building your profitable online business from copyblogger.com.
Hey everyone, Brian Clark from Copyblogger here with another edition of Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. Today I'm very pleased to have as our guest Tim Ferriss, the New York Times bestselling author of 4-Hour Workweek, the man behind the exceptionally popular Experiments in Lifestyle Design blog, and the author of The 4-Hour Body, which is out this week, and a very, very interesting book. I've got it on pre-order. I have not got my copy in my hands yet, but we're going to talk a little bit about that, but more specifically, we're going to talk about, from the beginning, how Tim used his blog to get his first book to the bestseller list and do all sorts of other cool stuff. So welcome with me, Tim Ferriss. Tim, how are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me. Greetings from New York City.
Oh, and thank you for joining us. Tim is actually phoning this in, no pun intended, because he's on the road on the book tour. So he's not in his normal recording studio type setup, but I think it'll be fine, and we're just lucky to get some insights here. So first thing, congratulations on the new book.
Thank you. It's been 3 years in the making, 3 times longer than the 4-Hour work week, so I'm very excited.
It's funny how that works that way.
Yeah, I know. I think it's the pressure of the sophomore act, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. The dreaded sophomore slump is, I think that affects anyone, but I think you're actually going wider here, if my opinion is anything, because it looks exceptional. Anyway, we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. What I really want to do is take people back before anyone knew who Tim Ferriss was. And from reading the 4-Hour Work Week, we do have one similar story in that before anyone knew who we were, we both had businesses that did well, very well, but we didn't like them. Tell people a little bit about that, and then let's talk about how you wrote the book and how you started the blog.
Got it. So as background, I graduated from school and originally worked in Silicon Valley making $40,000 a year in high-tech sales. So I was working at a storage area networking company selling data storage systems to companies like DreamWorks, et cetera, and working all day, every day. It was a startup after all, and I was a low-level employee. After a year of that, the company was very clearly going to implode, started my own company, and after about 2 years was making more per month than I had been making per year, but like you said, had absolutely no time. So it was a sports nutrition company. I was working from about 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. because we had distribution in roughly 15 countries, so I'd start with the U.K. and then just work all the way over to Japan across the time zones. And in mid-2004, had a long-term girlfriend at the time, probably the closest I've come to getting engaged, break everything off because of my schedule. And she actually gave me, if you've ever seen those wire-brushed metal picture frames that fold out from Target, she gave me one of those with a collage that said, business hours end at 5 p.m. in the middle. And I still have it to this day as a reminder, but she said, put this on your desk for your own personal health. And it was at that point that I began to try to either remove myself from the business or shut it down. And that was a 4-week process in the UK that ended up working out, ended up traveling around the world for the next 2 years or so. And that experience combined with classes that I've been teaching in high-tech entrepreneurship at Princeton since 2003 formed the basis for the 4-Hour Work Week. But it was not a success right off the bat. It was turned down by 26 out of 27 publishers. But that's a bit of the background on where the 4-Hour Work Week came out of.
Yeah, I love those multiple turned down stories. It seems like if you're really striking a chord, it's going to be rejected way up more often than it's accepted. Interesting.
No, absolutely. And I'll add something to that, which is it was rejected very, very violently by the people who disliked it. And it was later embraced equally powerfully by the people with whom it struck a chord. And I think what you need to be very concerned about with any type of idea, if you're doing market testing, is an indifferent or lukewarm response, not a polarizing response. That can be a very valuable thing.
Absolutely. The middle of the road is the best place to get run over.
Yep.
Okay, so let's talk real quick about the four-hour thing, because I know you caught a little flack from the overly literal-minded.
Yep.
Tell us what you mean by four-hour work week.
Yep, so the 4 hours originally was not the first title. It was actually Drug Dealing for Fun and Profit, but we tested about 12 titles on Google AdWords to see what the click-through rates would be, bidding on key terms or search terms that were related to content of the book, like World Travel 401k. The 4 hour work week was actually a compromise, meaning I was spending about 2 hours per week managing my company in around 2005. So I proposed a 2 hour work week to the publishers. They said that's completely unbelievable, and we compromised with the 4 hour work week. But the objective of the book is to show people how to increase their per hour output. So you have people like Tim Draper, who is a financier, VC, who funded Hotmail, among others, and he gave a testimonial to the book, but he said it will allow you to get 15 times more done in your normal 40-hour work week. So the objective is really just to create a highly leveraged, time-rich, and also income-rich, whether it's career or startup, and how to architect that. But it doesn't have to mean 4 hours a week. For many people, it means going from 80 hours a week to 40 hours a week, and not the 4 hours a week.
And there's also a component here of, if you're doing what you love, then
right.
Is that really work? Because right. I know you get – people give you flack every time they see you looking at your computer. Like, oh, Tim Ferriss right. is working again, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, this is a really important point. So the objective is to have complete control of your time so that you can allocate it to what you want to allocate it to. I am very type A. I am always engaged in some project, whether it's Donors Choose, where I'm an advisory member, or investing in startups, and I'm an investor in Twitter, an advisor to StumbleUpon, Evernote, a lot of these companies. I love getting out in the world and doing things, but I also want to avoid the minutiae and the repetitive and so forth and so on. So it's like you said, it's about spending as much time as possible doing what you love to do or what will give you the highest return on investment.
Cool. I love that. Okay. It's been a while since I've seen you in real life, but I remember we talked about the blog and that you started it before the book, before anyone, you know, again, before anyone knew who you were. And then you literally had to build it up along to a certain degree with the book from nothing. So share with people that story, because so many people start off the same way you did, but they don't realize that we all started off the same way with one reader or two readers. It's both of our email addresses, right?
Right. Exactly. So I started off, in fact, looking at blogs critically on December 26th of 2006, which was before April 2007 when the 4 hour work week came out. And I had no blog. Based on talking to a few friends in Silicon Valley, I decided that WordPress was the platform I would choose. And I started a blog with just a very horrible theme and began putting up posts intending to have no readers. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. I wanted to get comfortable with the platform and with the process before I started promoting the blog. So I did that for a good month and a half, after which I met with a gentleman named Rick Bruner, who at the time worked for DoubleClick. I'm not sure if he's still there, in New York City, and I asked him for feedback on my blog. And the feedback he gave me was very valuable. What he said was, a mediocre blog is more of a liability than no blog at all. And at the time, my blog was very helter-skelter. I had posts that were lists. I had posts that were just one paragraph linking to other people. There was no consistency. The dates were all over the place. And there was no real unifying theme to the blog. And I took his advice to heart, meaning, if you're going to do a blog, really do a blog. If not, focus on a different channel that you prefer, whether that's Twitter or Foursquare or direct mail for that matter. It could be anything, but choose what you're good at. I've had a lot of best-selling authors approach me to do blogs, and I ask them, do you want to do a blog? Do you enjoy writing? Do you enjoy responding to comments? And if not, just stick with what you're good at. If you're good at television, for example. In my case, I focused on the blog, and there were two things that really made the difference for me right out of the gate. Number one was going from time-dependent content, like anything that is news-dependent, to evergreen content. So I want my content to appreciate over time and value on Google, meaning that my posts will continue to receive a lot of traffic if I put in the time. So I always aim for topics that will be perennial, whether that's an introduction to Seneca, which was one of my popular posts. It's actually 15 pages long, so also broke every rule of blogging with that, all the way to how to become Jason Bourne, which crossing multiple country borders, international banking, things like that. That was my most popular post on StumbleUpon, which has been a huge source of traffic for me. It's always in the top three traffic refers, to how to lose fat in 20 pounds in 30 days, which ended up being my most popular blog post and one of the reasons that I ended up committing to doing the 4-Hour Body. So focusing on evergreen content, number one. The second was, of the $8,000 or so that I spent on the entire 4-Hour work week launch, everything, including the blog cost, everything else, was going to conferences and meeting with bloggers in person. All right, so Robert Scoble has jokingly said that my business plan for the 4-Hour Work Week was getting drunk with bloggers, but that's just about right. You don't have to get drunk, but to give you an example, I bought a ticket to CES, didn't go to CES, spent the entire time in a place called the Seagate Blog House, which was a lounge for bloggers where they could get free drinks, and just hung out there for the entire three-day period talking to bloggers. And when I say talking to bloggers, I don't mean pitching bloggers. I would tell them right up front, I'd say, I'm actually here. It's my first time at CES. I don't know anything about blogging. I have my first book coming out, and I'm just trying to learn as much as I can. And then I would leave it up to them to ask me, what is your book about? Okay, what is it about? When's it coming out? Who's your publisher? Rather than trying to force feed it. And if it was a good fit, meaning if it seemed they would legitimately be interested in part of the content, I would say, hey, I don't expect anything at all, but my publisher is giving me advanced copies. I really think this particular chapter, about 10, 15 pages, would really be of interest to you. I'm happy to send you a copy, and I don't expect any type of write-up or anything. And that type of soft sell really worked well, and that's the entire reason why I ended up getting the buzz online that I did, which put the book on the New York Times the first week it came out. It's been on the New York Times for more than 3 years unbroken now.
So literally, at the beginning with the first book, the launch strategy was literally exposure to other people's audiences. In other words, you were writing evergreen content that did well on social media. And perhaps even more importantly, you're reaching out to other people, not by, you know, cold emails or press releases or this other stuff that I'm sure you put up with as much as we do, or you actually probably have an automatic delete function. Some kind of algorithm. I haven't figured that out yet. I just have to delete. But, you know, imagine that. Go out and meet people in real life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the least crowded channel. And the other approach I would take, because I didn't want to walk up to, I didn't want to have a cold approach in person if I could avoid it, is later on at, let's say, South by Southwest, where I did my first real presentation on 4-Hour Work Week, I would go up to moderators of panels, and I would watch the panel, of course, and I would then ask them, I would tell them what I was up to. Is there anyone you think I should talk to? Is there anyone you think I might get along with? Like, here's some of my hobbies. Literally, I would tell them, I'd be like, you know, I'm into these following things. I like rock climbing. I do kickboxing and this, that, and the other thing. I'm also writing my first book. You know, is there anyone I should hang out with here? I'm here for the entire week. And they would recommend, and then I would walk up to those people. And to give you an example, that's how I was introduced to Brian Oberkirk, great guy, and we did a podcast together, and then that ended up getting put on the front page of 43 Folders, which was clearly one of the biggest wins in the beginning. And it all came from a referral from a moderator at South by Southwest. So in person, it's the least crowded channel, and you need to tailor your message. And what that means is, when I was first offering to write guest posts or Q&As or to do interviews, anything that would make another blogger's life easier, which is not, hey, write a review of my book, I never asked for that. Whenever I was offering those things, I would spend as much time crafting the pitch as I would crafting a pitch for the New York Times. And that is very, very true. And it's better for you to decide what your top 10 targets are, which are usually not going to be the top 10 people on Technorati. So pick your top 10 targets, single author blogs when possible, and then tailor your pitch. You're going to get better results than pitching 500 bloggers with some type of press release email.
You know, it's interesting to me. I remember back in, I don't remember if it was Blog World or another conference where we first met, but mm-hmm. I was on a panel and you walked in and you sat right up front on the floor. And I looked over, I'm like, hey, that's Tim, you know.
I remember that. Yeah.
And instead of, you know, Tim the rock star, it was Tim the learner. I mean, you were just sitting right up there taking notes and everything. And then we spoke afterwards. And you asked my advice. I'm like, Tim, you're doing fine, but, you know, here, you could do this or you could do that. One thing I knew I didn't have to give you advice on was writing, specifically your copywriting. And again, we've been preaching for 5 years that it's not just about selling stuff. It's more like selling ideas. Apply copywriting mm-hmm. techniques to your content. You've always been really good at that. How did that happen?
So it was not innate. It was an entirely learned skill, and this started in college. I've always been fascinated by copywriting and direct response, and my first exposure, because I was a night owl starting age 2, was infomercials, actually. So I was always amazed by the persistence of certain infomercials, and I wanted to learn about direct response, and so I read Ogilvy on Advertising. I read Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins, which is free. It's public domain. And then moved on to people like Joe Sugarman, who's an amazing copywriter. Joe Sugarman has a series of books. He also brought Blue Blockers to market, sold more than $1 billion, and Cialdini, Persuasion, etc. I really made a study of it, and I came to realize how important wordsmithing is. And you'll notice when I gave you my approach and my wording with the bloggers at South by Southwest and so forth, I was very deliberate in the wording that I used. I didn't want to come off as a hard sell. I wanted to target. I wanted to ask the right questions. And that is as true in writing as it is in person. So reading different types of books, whether it's Dan Kennedy or Cialdini, has been extremely instrumental. And then it came down to testing. So as good as your copywriting might be in your mind, in theory, it's usually a pretty rude awakening when you put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard and try it out. So I spent more than $1 million, and you don't have to do this, but in the sports nutrition company, I spent well over $1 million on pay-per-click and direct response advertising. But that was before... That was before blogging, really. And now you have the ability to, for example, go to Seth Godin's blog and look at which of his posts are most retweeted. He has the retweet count right there. And what I realized in the Twitterverse is that at least 50% of the people who retweet do not click through and read the content. They retweet it based on the headline. So there are a lot of tools that you can use to refine your copy editing and copywriting skills without having to spend any money at all. And it has been a lifelong process of experimentation and discovery. So that's how I've refined it, though. It's purely through training, nothing innate whatsoever.
You're a man after my own heart. Yeah, you make a good point. Our most popular writers at CopyBlogger have learned to go to the popular article section on CopyBlogger for inspiration. You know, it's... Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily, and I know you're big on this, because you don't have to pander to the audience, because a lot of times the audience doesn't know what it wants specifically. They right. just have general desires and needs and problems, right? So it's mm-hmm. your job to observe what they want broadly and then bring yourself, your passion, to them to become literally a leader, which Seth made a good point of in his book, Tribes.
Absolutely. Yeah, people want clear direction. And what that means is you don't have to create a false position on a subject. That's I think, a huge disservice, and you end up really deafening your message. If you're constantly taking strong positions on things you don't feel strongly about, people will stop responding to those. But when you have a strong opinion or a strong position on something, make it clear. Don't hedge in every other paragraph saying, well, you know, in some cases this, in some cases that, but, you know, more research is required for until I can say A, B, and C. No, if you have a very strong position, which you use in your own life, make that clear. And if you do that, you will polarize. There's no two ways around it. But people do want leadership. And that doesn't mean being a dictator. But it does mean that if you want usable information that will result in a good blog post, if you're going to poll your readership, for example, don't ask them, what would you like me to write on, and then get 7,000 responses, and perhaps you only act on one, and then you piss off 6,999 people. instead of doing that, you say, and you can certainly ask for thoughts here and there, but what you would be better off doing is saying, here are five topics that I would like to write on. Which one should I write on first? And that way you're ensuring that whatever you're writing about is something that connects with you. And I've always found that to be the most effective in terms of predictive power for popular posts.
Absolutely. And of course, with social media, the ability to just observe is unheralded. I mean, in no time in history could you observe the thoughts, opinions, desires, et cetera, of so many people just from your chair. And I really try to stress the ability to observe as one of the great skills, I think, that leads to, for example, you understanding that your next book would be The 4-Hour Body based on, I've read your blog for 3 years. I know why you wrote this book, and yet it's also something that you're exceptionally passionate about. We're going to talk more about the book in just a second, but I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because, okay, so 3 years forward, you're going to write another book. We both know that writing books is not the way to get rich necessarily.
Right, agreed.
It's the other stuff. Because of your blog and the book, you've created all these different opportunities for yourself. And in fact, those opportunities come to you as opposed to you chasing them down in most cases. In other words, it gets easier. You get a payback for all the work. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little what you've done to capitalize on being Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, sure. So, and you know, I may be 14 minutes into my 15 minutes of fame, so take all of this with a grain of salt. But the blog, there are a few things I've done with the blog. So first and foremost is this was a conscious decision. I did not, and I'm not saying this is the best for everyone, but I did not advertise on my blog or monetize it really, besides having a link to a book, for quite a long time. And I'm not saying that's always the best approach, but what that allowed me to do was establish a very high degree of credibility and trust with my audience. And I was able to then, in very occasional posts, ask for favors, and people would help. And this was reciprocity, because I'd given so much of myself without asking for anything else. And secondly, What I've really realized is it's not about having a big audience. And I do have a large audience, in some cases more than a million uniques a month. But in the beginning and even throughout, you want the right audience. So if you can pick the right 1,000 people, which is a fantastic exercise, you can get anything you want in the world for no money, all right, if you pick your audience correctly. And you do that by attracting them with specific types of content. But I'll come back to this. Everyone should read an article by Kevin Kelly, co-founding editor of Wired, called 1,000 True Fans. It's a very short piece, and if you read nothing else about marketing for the rest of your life, read that article. And that is why you can have a very niche blog. Let's say it's about venture capital and different types of term sheets. Okay, very, very niche. But if you have the right 1,000 readers, which having very high-quality content on that topic would attract, then if you put out a request for any type of access to people or resources, chances are you'll get it. And in my case, to give you one example, I forgot my MacBook. I was on my way to Nicaragua, and I was in, I think it was Dallas Airport, and I needed to finish my book. So I put out a tweet and a note on my blog saying, if anyone's in Dallas Airport or can get to Dallas Airport, I need a MacBook charger, and I'll pay you twice retail. And within 20 minutes, people had found me in Dallas Airport offering their MacBook charger. And that is something that you cannot buy. I mean, that is really something that you can't buy. And you can build a very highly successful blog with the right audience, I think, in less than 6 months if you approach it the right way. And the right way means don't just live in isolation expecting traffic to come to you if you create good content. Get out, find bloggers who will, for whom guest posts make sense. I mean, really focus on guest posts and meeting these people in person if you're serious about it. That would be my recommendation. The other thing I would say is in terms of headlines, which are very important, you could become an expert copywriter for headlines within 4 weeks at most if you pay a lot of attention to what is most popular on Big.com, Reddit, and let's just say Seth Godin's blog. I mean, just those three resources alone, you'll be able to start testing and creating good headlines.
One thing I would say there is that Seth writes bad headlines now because he's so trusted. I mean, Seth is the poster child for how much easier it gets.
Yeah, this is true. You don't have to try as hard once you get a little further along.
Yeah,
so maybe just stick with Big and Reddit.
I tell Chris Brogan, my dear friend, all the time, because he tries to write Seth-like headlines, and I'm like, Chris, you're Big, but you're not Seth. You know, you still you have to try on the titles. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and even with Twitter, depending if you're following the right people on Twitter and you see what gets retweeted, it's another great indicator. It doesn't matter the platform. It's not the technology. It's the way we're wired. It hasn't really changed. Going back to your Seneca post, right? So,
yep.
Anyway, that's excellent advice. So, okay, the new book, 4-Hour Body, tell us a little bit about it, and then I want to talk a little bit about what you've done real quick this time around, because you've done some cool stuff like that trailer and you've gone off platform, even though you have a huge audience. You know, I mean, great stuff there. So tell us about the book, and then let's talk about what was going through your head from a promotional standpoint.
Yep, sure thing. So I'll keep it short. Most people associate me with time management, productivity, and working with startups or companies like Google, Microsoft, et cetera. But in reality, my real obsession is physical tracking, and I've been doing that since I was about 18. So what the 4-Hour Workweek did is it bought me access to the world's best scientists, athletes, coaches, doctors, black market chemists, et cetera. So the 4-Hour Body, the subtitle is An Uncommon Guide to Rapid Fat Loss, Incredible Sex, and Becoming Superhuman. And it is a choose-your-own-adventure guide to improving any aspect of physical appearance or performance, from ultra-endurance and sleep to sex to fat loss to muscular gain. And in every topic, there are about 50 topics, short little chapters, I do experiments on myself, ranging from the relatively moderate to the insanely extreme, like injecting stem cell growth factors up and down my spine from Israel. And I then, of the things that worked best and were safest for every one of those topics, I tested it on hundreds of people recruited from my blog. And the entire book is intended to say, here's the 2.5% of everything in the world that works best for every one of these topics. So that's the 4-Hour Body in a nutshell, but it's by far the most important thing I've ever written, I think.
Yeah, and I think I alluded to this earlier, but it's almost like we could see you going there because you're so passionate about that, and I do have to thank you for doing the experiments on yourself. I mean,
my pleasure.
That would really be bad for me, but I lost 25 pounds partially on some advice you gave on the blog. Julian Smith, who co-wrote Trust Agents, gave me some advice on the whole paleo diet thing. I put those two together. It totally worked, but I've pre-ordered the book because I gained half of it back, backslided thanks to stress. So I love this body hacking stuff.
Yeah. And a big part of body hacking, And this is also true for blogging, is, and I'll explain what I mean by that. You need to understand, it's very helpful to understand how you failure-proof behavioral change. And the way that you do that is by talking to experts like BJ Fogg, who runs the Persuasion Lab at Stanford, which I did, to really determine how do you ensure that with these various programs and protocols you don't backslide. And that the same principles apply to fat loss that apply to, let's say, committing to blog twice a week. And there are plenty of people who also backslide on their blogs, where they'll commit to best practices, and then after 3 or 4 weeks, they start procrastinating or deviating, and the same principles apply. So how do you minimize abandonment is really, really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty critical because we all have goals, and yet going back to something you said earlier, people really like specific instruction, the how-to rules. And from a content marketing standpoint, I tell people over and over, if you feel like you're giving too much away, you're probably on the right track. And that's something you've done, which is give away an incredible amount of information, but it certainly hasn't hurt book sales because people are always willing to pay for the organization and the stuff that no one's seen before. And I know in this case, some of the access you had to scientists and experts is quite remarkable. Again, a benefit of the blog.
Yeah, this is all benefit of the blog. I mean, to give you an example, I wrote a post on how I conquered my fear of swimming, and I went from, this is not an exaggeration, this is very literal, I went from 2 laps maximum in a pool, so I was born premature and have lung problems, went from 2 laps in a pool maximum to about 40 laps in a pool within 10 days or so. And it was with some help from a triathlete. And I wrote a post on this. This was during the Olympics. And in the first 50 comments or so, I had a comment from a silver medalist in swimming. And then I had a comment from the national team coach. This is during the Olympics. So all of this came from the blog. I mean, if someone came to me now and said, a company comes to me and says, we will pay you $5 million if you give us your blog, the answer would be no. And I never, ever could have imagined a few years ago that I would have said that. But what I've come to realize is the income is not the most valuable piece of this. The most valuable piece is having access to things that you cannot buy with money. And that could be NASA scientists, it could be the top strength coaches in the world, all of whom I've had access through the blog. And I agree with you. It's really, really just mind-blowing when I think back to 3 years ago or 4 years ago, starting off on a shitty, terrible theme with no experience with 2 readers, thinking, you know what, I'll give this a shot, but I'm sure it's not going to sell more than a few hundred copies of books. And now where we are, it's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So you literally were able to write a more credible book because of having written the first book, certainly also.
Right. Promotion. Yes. We didn't talk about promotion yet.
Yeah. So you've done some cool stuff and I've been taking notes because it all fits within the same general launch philosophy, I guess, you know, which dates back to the movie industry, right? I mean, you know, you're teasing with pre-production and then stars are attached and then, you know, you've always got something to talk about. So it doesn't seem spammy. It's just news, right? Until it becomes spectacular. Tell us a little bit of what you did in that regard for 4-Hour Body.
So the 4-Hour Body, the launch of the 4-Hour Body is actually very similar to the launch of the 4-Hour Work Week with a few changes. So I remember speaking with a venture capitalist friend of mine over lunch when the 4-Hour Work Week first came out, and he said, congratulations on the launch. It's too bad you won't be able to do anything like this 6 months from now. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, the cat's out of the bag. You described how you do it, so now everyone's going to do it. And the reality is people would rather spam 500 bloggers than take the time to craft for 5. So in this case, I'm still targeting specific blogs like Huffington Post Books, but many of these didn't exist when the 4-Hour Work Week came out. So as one example, I put together a movie trailer, a 50-second movie trailer for the book, which turned out to be just absolutely gorgeous. And I found the director through my blog, big surprise, and debuted it on Huffington Post Books. There's a follow-up post coming within the next couple days, and that took the book from about 150 on Amazon to number 25 on Amazon, something like that. And then it stuck between 25 and 50 on Amazon. Had an immediate effect and a call to action at the end. Like you've said, I've worked very hard on calls to action. And that would be one example of something I did differently. Otherwise, something that I'm doing differently is using Facebook. So I will be doing quite a lot with Facebook and using my fan page as a way to drive sales or to drive people to the fan page. So I've been experimenting with advertising on Facebook, among other things, using sites like BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed.com. These are all new outlets that I'm using. But the general principles of the launch are the same as the 4-hour work week. So focus on evergreen content that will stick around. Focus on reaching out in person whenever possible to very specific outlets. And then be exceptionally precise in your messaging when you're hitting a specific audience. And give away, like you said, give away so much that you feel uncomfortable about it. And that is, I think that's when you get it just about right. When you do just enough is when you feel really uncomfortable about giving away too much.
One of the links I want to share in the show notes is your trailer that you did. And I remember that Dan Pink was one of the first people who did it. He did an animated trailer for his book, Johnny Bunko. It's becoming more common, do you think?
I think it's becoming more common. Daniel's a smart guy. We spoke quite a bit about that book, he and I. And book trailers are becoming more common. What I wanted to do is, rather than have a messaging over stills or animation, although I'll be experimenting with that as well, I have a second trailer coming out. But the first trailer, I really wanted to make it as much like a blockbuster movie trailer as possible, and I think it worked pretty well. And then we used that as the centerpiece for the 4hourbody.com site, which has worked out tremendously well and has had a huge amount of play. So that, I think, will give also people who are interested in copy a very clear idea of how in 50 seconds do you sell a book or a project that you've been working on for 3 years. And the reason I did 50 seconds, a few things, because I knew it would get the widest spread, but also because I could take something that's 50 seconds long and I could re-edit it down to 30 seconds so that it could be used for advertising on YouTube. So there are many different reasons that I did that way.
Excellent. Tim, you've been exceptionally generous with your time. I know you're busy. You've got a full week ahead of you with the launch of the book. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing this with us. Everyone, I'm going to link to, obviously, all the relevant stuff that we talked about, Kevin Kelly's 1,000 Fans, Tim's trailer, so you can take a look at that, but also the book itself. And as always, if you want to take a free ride on our Internet Marketing for Smart People email course, 20 parts, totally free, you can sign up for that as well. But Tim, thank you so much for being here.
Totally my pleasure. Always fun. Thanks for having me. Happy holidays, everyone.
Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. Weekly tips on marketing and building your profitable online business. From copyblogger.com.